Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, April 7th, 2009, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. Jackie Gist is unwell this evening, will not be joining us. Is anybody?
No.
Okay.
All right. Are there, we have some citizens signed up here. I'm not sure whether all these people are here for items that are on the agenda or that are not on the agenda. Mary Ann Prince, you're here for a matter not on our printed agenda. Maria, also. Patrick Day is here for same item. Stephanie Hirsch. Okay, and Sean Wilcox, same issue. Okay, it's a party. All right, we'll begin by hearing from Mary Ann Prince.
Just easier for you to get through.
I have a petition tonight to amend the Carrboro Livestock Ordinance, and over the past couple weeks, I've gathered 336 signatures in Carrboro. 240 of those are Carrboro residents. The current ordinance was developed 19 years ago, and it puts all livestock except for fowl and rabbits in a single category, requiring the same acreage for a 25-pound pygmy goat as for a 2,000-pound bull. We're asking that a new class be created for small livestock that's raised on a small scale. The new ordinance should focus on the well-being of the animal and the surrounding neighborhood as the number one priority. We propose the following requirements for keeping small livestock: that one, the animal must not exceed 200 pounds. Two, the keeper is required to obtain approval from all neighbors within a 75-foot radius of their lot. And to ensure that only serious and committed keepers acquire small livestock, the keeper must pay a $100 per lot permit fee. No more than four animals over 4 months of age in the small livestock class are allowed. And animal control may inspect animal facilities at will. We suggest using Portland, Oregon's very well-developed ordinance as a model for definitions and for inspection criteria. These suggestions are really just a point of departure for crafting what we would see that would become a small livestock ordinance. And I did bring copies of Portland's ordinance with me and would be happy to share it with anyone who's interested. There are several cities in the U.S. that have already adopted more progressive ordinances that allow small livestock, and those include Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Berkeley, Oakland, and Pasadena, California, Nashville, Tennessee, St. Louis, Missouri, and St. Paul, Minnesota, which is known as the most livable city in America. The idea of keeping livestock such as goats is not radical and new. What was radical and new was abolishing this. Goats can be clean, quiet, trainable, and are kept as pets worldwide, even in France. Goats have been domesticated for over 10,000 years, as long as dogs, but yes, there are some differences between the two, as goats do not bark, they eat invasives, and their waste can be used right in the garden. Carrboro is a unique town, famous for diversity and progressive ideals, and for being the Paris of the Piedmont. Allowing people who want to raise small goats safely and securely is going to enhance the diversity and character that our community is famous for. I have heard concerns that changing our ordinance will lead us to become overrun with goats. But consider that in St. Paul, where it is legal to own small livestock, there are only 6 to 8 active permits. In Seattle, where it is also legal, there are only about 2 dozen permits issued. A Minneapolis resident was quoted in the Star Tribune last August saying, "It's just not fair. How can it be legal to have goats, pigs, and bees in St. Paul, but people in Minneapolis have to hide theirs?" Minneapolis is currently in the process of trying to change their ordinance to be like that of their neighbors in St. Paul. If we amend our ordinance, I think we will see other communities look to us as a model for forward thinking on these small acts of sustainability. And we have a number of folks here tonight supporting us. If you guys could just raise your hands. Thank you.
I have a question for you, Marianne. My question is about the 75-foot agreement zone. And so there's two questions about that. One is, how did you come up with that radius? And why are you thinking 100%?
Our idea is to make this a little bit stricter than Portland's ordinance. We are looking at other ordinances in St. Paul and Seattle, I believe, have a certain percentage of neighbors that have to consent. They don't ask for 100%. I think that theirs asks for about 80%, and theirs asks for 100-foot radius. So our thinking was that, you know, if you have 100% of your neighbors agreeing to it, then it really should not be a problem.
Okay. I guess my concern about that, which maybe you could comment on, was, you know, I came and met your goats.
Right.
And I'd much rather have them as a neighbor than many dogs that I've lived near, as I guess you alluded to in your comments. I think, you know, they would be perfectly fine neighbors for anyone, but the way you're suggesting we craft this would put, you know, so maybe in that 75-foot range, there's 6 to 10 homes.
Right.
And that just one of those, if it was some kind of, you know, whatever, however you might characterize someone who wouldn't like goats of the sort you
right.
have, I won't do that characterization. But it gives them that single person veto power. And that seems...
Right.
I'm not sure I agree that that's how we would want to do that. So,
in the ordinances that we looked at, it's true that we didn't see any other city requiring 100% approval from neighbors. The average was about 80 to 85%. So I think if we were to do it, that would be a good range to look at.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
I have a question. How about the 200 pounds? Was that from the model or was that from some of the ordinances you saw?
That was... And there wasn't a pound limit with Portland's or with Seattle's, and that was another thing that we thought maybe as for Carrboro, since it's something new for us, maybe we put a size limitation on the animals. Our goats are 35 and 50 pounds, so 200 is much larger than what we have, but it would. So it would make it clear that you can't have a cow or a full-size pig in your backyard. Our thinking is that the only animals that would really be, that this would be pertinent for would be small goats and pot-bellied pigs.
Thank you.
I have one other question. If I can remember what it was. Oh, so currently you have the two goats, and does that make you in violation of the current ordinance?
It does, but when we got the goats and we read through the ordinance, we did not expect to be in violation because of the way that livestock was defined. We went through the process of applying for a permit, and actually I had Robert from Animal Control come over 3 days in a week and seemed very sure that I would not have a problem getting the permit. And what he said is that this was a new situation for him with the goats. We failed to get the permit because of the rules about the 40,000 square feet for all livestock other than the fowl and the rabbits, and 20,000 per animal.
And so what's your current status, then, in regard to that?
Her current status is she's asking for the ordinance to be changed.
Yeah. Well, I know that, but, I mean, are you under threat of losing your goats?
No, we haven't. They haven't been a nuisance. We've had them now, since since animal control came out, and animal control did not come out because there was a nuisance complaint, just a complaint in general that we were violating an ordinance. We've now had them for about 5 weeks, and they don't make any noise whatsoever. They don't try and get out of the fence. They are the furthest thing from a nuisance that I can imagine. And also, we've had two newspaper articles written about them, and there have been a lot of comments that follow those newspaper articles that were very supportive of us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I have a question. Marianne, you did mention, you said pygmy goat. I'm looking at the 200 pounds, so I'm wondering what's between a goat and a pot-bellied pig that could give me some picture or something that could be in between that to 200 pounds.
There are some breeds of miniature sheep that I don't know very much about them, and but I was reading that there are people who keep miniature sheep, like in the same way that I would keep goats, and you know they tend to be very also docile, agreeable pets. You can use their waste in your garden. They're actually better pets than dogs in regards to not making noise and not having the same kind of waste.
The sheep I'm familiar with, I happen to have some farmyard experience at the Life Science Museum, and they're full size, but they're not close to 200 pounds. So, is there some kind of a listing someplace of, in any of these ordinances that you've looked at that you might share with us?
No, 200 pounds, Sean and I were working on this part together, and 200 pounds I kind of felt like was a little high personally. I probably, I would probably say 120 is a good number, or 100. But I think we put 200 in there just to kind of add some flexibility and some, this is kind of a platform for negotiation and just a point of departure.
Okay. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Maria Rowan.
Hi, I'm Maria Rowan, and I live one street over from Cathy Road, where Marianne has her goats, and I'm a homeowner. There's one house between us, which is actually the group home, and I actually rented on Cathy Road right across from them also in 1992. They weren't there yet. In the 1990s, a family had a mountain lion on Macaulay Street in Chapel Hill, and it never occurred to me that goats were not legal in Carrboro. I pretty much thought if you called it a pet, you could keep it, and I was very surprised to see the ordinance that had all these very strict rules about that would apply to pygmy goats. I had thought about having them myself. There's a growing trend currently both to know where our food comes from and to preserve some of the skills and knowledge that our grandparents and parents had. Marianne and I have talked about, along with my daughter Emily, having grandparents and parents who grew up in houses where there were chickens in the backyard and other sources of food. I know the neighborhood I grew up in, there was a large garden as well that the entire neighborhood kept. To me, the petition before you addresses the interest of citizens who would like to keep small goats as part of preserving those skills and knowledge, as well as the welfare of the animals and the sanitation and safety concerns of the neighbors. What's come up as well in our neighborhood in terms of discussing the goats is another national trend, which is thinking of our homes not just as residences, but as that have equity that builds over time, that is a kind of goose that lays the golden egg. This in Carver, this is pretty good reasoning. Property values have escalated so much in the last 20 years that most homes are not affordable to the average college-educated middle-class family of my acquaintance. And while this is a real boon to us who have been able to buy in, it's also led to a lot of fears about someone killing that goose that lays the golden egg. Some neighborhoods in Carver have homeowners associations that regulate everything from whether you can have pink flamingos to whether you can rent and who you can rent to. And there's always the option to preserve your investment by buying in one of those neighborhoods. That's not something that I would have chosen, and obviously it's not something many of my neighbors would choose. Our neighborhood is a mix, as many neighborhoods in Carver and Chapel Hill are, of homeowners and rentals. Some of those rentals include up to five people. As well, you can pretty much tell from driving around the neighborhood that there's not any regulation beyond what comes from the town, as well as objects of sculpture from recycled materials, large vegetable gardens, and landscaping that varies from meticulous to non-existent. Here are some things that I've seen in our neighborhood that most homeowners associations would forbid. Christmas ornaments and decorations of enormous scale, to say nothing of the carbon footprint that keeps them running. Work trucks, including an 18-wheeler rig for several years, using open carports and driveways as storage. My neighbors to the left actually just stored their stuff under a camper top on sawhorses for 2 years because they didn't have a driveway or carport. There are cars stored in yards, sometimes just stored, sometimes under sheds that are being worked on and not running. There's an aluminum building, and I use that loosely. I think it's a shed that serves as a tax office, complete with an advertising sign in the front yard. Quite honestly, I am selling my house this spring, and my main concern is that my neighbors to the right are actually building an entire second house in their backyard right now, which is permitted. As well, I was told when I bought our house that the power line easements affected the desirability, as does the group home across the street. And I have to say that the horns that get honked by the workers at 6 a.m. Have woken me up, and the chickens so far have not. What I'm getting at is that one person's storage or livelihood or even hobby aesthetically pleases or displeases you individually. I like the Quite Contrary Farm. It's been wonderful for the children in the neighborhood. I like the way it looks, but whether I like it or you like it, or whether someone who wants to buy my house likes it, has little to do with whether or not it's sanitary or safe for someone to engage in keeping goats or chickens. And I think it's just important to consider that there are a lot of neighborhoods in Carver that currently people are buying homes in because they are interested in gardening, they are interested in urban homesteading. Maybe they want to set up a sculpture studio on the corner, as we also have nearby. And I just think it's important to remember that that's part of the nature of Carver, that it's not just about how much I can make off my home this year or next year or 10 years from now. Thanks.
Pat, Jay?
Well, I'm Pat Day, and I live at 100 Gary Road in Wynwood neighborhood.
I've lived there
since 1993, and I've been walking my dog through Cathy Road. He's been alive for 12 years, been walking that same walk every day just about, and I didn't even know they had goats until Friday. So I've known Mary Ann and Sean since they moved there, and have seen what they've been doing, and I thought it was very interesting, and didn't see any harm at all in them having a few goats in their backyard, especially since the way they have them, you really can't even tell from the road that they're there. And just came to offer my support to them and let the town know that I think having goats would be good. I mean, someday we might be driving go-karts to work, you know, I don't know.
Thanks.
Stephanie Hirsch?
Hi, my name is Stephanie Hirsch, and my husband and I rent a house that is, there's one house in between my house and Prince Wilcock house. My husband and I, we moved back to this neighborhood. We lived here 3 years ago. We lived in Wilmington, and we lived in the house that we're living in now for 2 years, and never knew anybody in our neighborhood, but when we moved back in July, Joel and I did, my husband and I did, we really wanted to engage in our neighborhood, and I saw Marianne out there gardening until like nighttime all the time, and I was like, she looks like a really interesting person, and so I thought I'd like to get to know her, but I don't want to scare her, so we just kind of got to know each other gradually, and the way that we did that was through her garden, I suppose. Several times in the 4 months that my husband was looking for a job, we didn't always have food for dinner, and somehow we would always get invited over. Sean would say, why don't you come over, and they would feed us from their garden, and so I thought that was really awesome. And one of the things that we noticed when we came into their household was a giant chalkboard with the entire neighborhood, and so I was like, and so it has their entire neighborhood on it, and I said, well, you guys should be town managers, because it has everybody's names listed. This is before they got their goats, and they really take an interest in everybody in the community, and that's been their interest in just really knowing and caring about what everybody needs, and they do that through making a point to know who people are and what they need. And so, let's see. There was a time that Marianne's dogs got out of their backyard, and I was just grateful to get a phone call on my cell phone that someone called me and said they needed something, and she was really conscientious. She wanted to make sure her dogs were safe, and that was just like she would have driven home from Raleigh to make sure that her dogs were safe. So I think that, and she does have chickens, and she really prepares and makes sure that she had this goat house that she built with her own body. I mean, she prepared that and structurally very sound for the goats to stay in, but the goats prefer standing in her at her kitchen sink, not doing the dishes. Just kidding. But I just think that they are that docile that they would be capable of doing dishes if you asked them to. And they don't make any noise. They did. We were woken up by, I think, frogs maybe a couple of nights ago, and the frogs were a lot louder than any goats, and I've been recently helping her with a little kid camp endeavor that she's doing right now, and the whole time we were there, there were seven children, and we were all playing in the front yard with the hay and reading books, and I didn't even once hear the goats, and I was there for probably 3 hours, so it just that's in the middle of the afternoon, so I think safety is really important to her, and I think that the needs of her neighbors are of the utmost importance, and that's why they've taken the time to run it by the town.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks,
Steph. And Sean Wilcock.
I have an official aid that was actually made about a year ago.
So my name's Sean Wilcock, and I own the property in Wynnewood where Marianne and I and my teenage daughter and the goats that brought us here reside. We moved there about a year ago, and I was lucky enough to buy it at the very top of the real estate bubble, but I have complete confidence that the value of our home and surrounding homes will continue to increase in the coming years. What's in front of you, Marianne previously was a museum exhibit designer, And one of the first things she did when we moved to Carrboro was to blow up the survey we had in the process of purchasing the house and make, by hand, this scale model of our house. And if you see, it's actually on the southwest side of the property. It's not what it may appear to be, the Gardens of Versailles. That's actually Marianne's master plan for our property. And when I saw it for the first time, I was a little bit skeptical, but as Stephanie mentioned, Marianne has been outside day and night for most of the past year, rain or shine, implementing that plan. There have been some tricky spots. Our neighborhood, Windwood, is a bit of a swamp, but she very cleverly, and you can see on there, dug a French drain and redirected some of that swamp into a bioretention pond. And then we noticed mosquito larvae coming into the pond, so Marianne very cleverly put some little guppies that we got for 10 cents at the pet store. And they ate all the mosquitoes, so no more mosquito problems. Let's see. The point of all this is that even though our property right now is a work in progress, I have complete confidence that Marianne and I, mostly Marianne, will be able to turn it into one of the most beautiful and self-sustaining properties in Carrboro. Part of that is small livestock. Our goats eat the English ivy that has actually killed most of our neighbors' trees, and they turn that into garden-ready waste that doesn't need any composting. And one day they'll provide milk and cheese for our family. They're not noisy or smelly or destructive or dangerous. And they may not ever feed the town, but they can feed our little family to a degree and help us teach the children of our neighborhood about animal stewardship and self-sufficiency and neighborliness. Thanks.
Thank all right. Thank you.
Come on up.
I'm not on the list. No, the list to be on.
That's okay. You don't have to be on the list.
Thank you.
If you would state your name, though, so we'll have it.
I think. I'm just getting over a week of laryngitis. I'm Dixie Spiegel, and you have received some emails from me, and I am here to speak in opposition to this petition. I just have a couple of points that I want to make. My concern is about property values, and I'm not so much concerned about goats in themselves, as I emailed to Marianne. I'm sure they're absolutely adorable. And I've never been concerned about them smelling or bringing flies or anything. I don't know that much about goats. What I am concerned is that much of the petition was arguing about the sustainability, and I'm seeing a pattern in the Prince Wolcock family plan to build this farm life in the neighborhood. They have a chicken coop in their front yard. They have a very tall, long woodshed in their front yard. I've had three people independently tell me that the chickens get out, although I have not seen it because I don't go down the road because it upsets me. I'm just concerned that this is part of a pattern that will just escalate and escalate. What we're talking about here is changing not just the character of the neighborhood, but the character of Carrboro, because this is not going to be a change in the definition for just Windwood. It's going to be anyone who has the land available can then get a goat or a potbelly pig or whatever small creature you want. I think that's a very big step, and I don't know the process here, but I would hope that there would be some sort of a well-publicized public forum so that folks who don't know about this issue could speak out from both sides. Do you have any questions?
I don't think so. Not right now. I think what's probably going to happen with this particular petition is what we would typically do is refer this to the town staff and ask them to give us a report back.
and they would get back to us in, I'm reluctant to promise what time period. I know they're getting ready, working on their budget and so forth. So staff's pretty busy, but hopefully fairly promptly, a few weeks. And so when they report back to us, that'll be the opportunity for the Board of Aldermen to decide whether there are any changes in the ordinance that we would want to consider. And I think if we were inclined to look at changing the ordinance, that we would probably schedule a public hearing so people could be heard about this and be advertised in the newspaper and so forth. So those are the kind of next couple of steps, or not, depending on what the board makes of whatever report we get back from the staff.
Thank you. That's very
all
clear.
Right. Thank you. Is there a motion to refer this matter to the staff?
Yeah, I'd like to move that with that specific request, Steve, that the report back include some review of some of the questions that were raised in regard to the radius around the house and the number of homeowners who might need to support this, and Randy's question about what animals we're talking about in the proposed weight range, or if that's the best way of doing it. And I guess, you know, you might perhaps look at any of the several ordinances that were mentioned, and there might be different alternatives of how to handle this. And I guess also, I don't know if this needs to be part of the motion, but I just want to state that, you know, while that's under review, I would hope that, you know, that unless there's a very, very clear nuisance problem with Ms. Prince's goats, that, you know, that we could allow those to, or continue to have those in her home.
Captain Lamb is here if anybody has a particular question from an enforcement standpoint, but Chief's out of town this week, but she and I have been in conversation about this, knowing that this item was likely coming before the board. We really just sort of stepped back from the enforcement side. But I think there's clearly a violation with the current ordinance, but knowing that we might have some direction to take another look at this, we've not really been active. And Cornell, unless you know something otherwise, I don't think we've had any complaints. Is that true? Okay,
that's what I was looking for.
I'll second it, though. I would like if staff can find the discussions that were held 19 years ago, if there are any minutes or if, that's why I said if there are any minutes with regards to that. And just, if you will, some basic information about the, the goats themselves and waste removal and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I used to be a former goat owner, so I can give you some.
Yeah, I understand.
First-hand account in the matter. Okay.
Let me just clarify, because several other municipal ordinances were cited. Is there any way that we could get web links for that ahead of, you know, the staff report? Rather than waiting,
Ms. Prince probably has some.
Yeah, I can send them to you. Okay.
I think you got the Portland link because that was included
in
the petition.
But there were about
example.
Four other municipalities.
Okay. If you would send those along, Ms. Prince, that would be helpful. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. We refer this with those various comments and input to the staff. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed. The matter passed unanimously.
I want to ask one additional question. And if the report could contain sort of the, if an ordinance like this is passed, how applicable is it to pre-existing homeowners association stuff? Requirements.
Okay.
Say that. It wouldn't have anything to do with,
right.
with if there's restrictive covenants.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a different matter. It wouldn't have any impact upon existing restrictive covenants.
Okay. That's helpful.
Okay. We're on to our consent agenda, which, Mr. Manager, if you would call out what that is.
Okay. Item one is approval of minutes of the previous meetings of March 10th, 17th, and 24th. Item two is a request to approve the resolution for the issuance of $2,590,000 of sidewalk bond anticipation notes. Item three is a resolution adopting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as guiding principles. Item four is a request to adopt an ordinance amending Chapter 8 of the Town Code. Item five is a request to adopt an ordinance amending the Town Code to provide that one member of the Transportation Advisory Board may be a resident of the town, the town's extraterritorial jurisdiction, or the Carborough Joint Planning Area. Item six is a request to set a public hearing on the preliminary design for Smith Level Road Transportation Improvement Project U-2803 for April 21st. Item seven is a resolution making an appointment to the Owassa Board of Directors. Item eight is a request to reset the continuation of the public hearing on the CUP request for Colleton Crossing from April 28th to May 19th. Item nine is a resolution making an appointment to the Human Services Commission. Item 10 is a request to adopt a resolution expressing opposition to Senate Bill 1004. Item 11 is approval of an identity theft red flag policy. Item 12 is consideration of a Carborough Centennial Committee to plan a celebration of Carborough's 100th birthday. And item 13 is a request to approve a budget amendment.
I move adoption of everyone but eight.
Okay, there's actually been a request.
Number three.
On, yeah, number three. That's the resolution adopting Universal Declaration of Human Rights as guiding principles. And I would like to suggest about this. Somebody brought to my attention this afternoon that although that document is good as far as it goes, it was drafted 61 years ago, and it does not include, for example, issues related to sexual orientation or gender identity and that type of thing. So I would like to suggest, and I think maybe there are a few other issues. So I would like to suggest that we pull that item and bring it back to our next business meeting with maybe some edits that various board members might want to suggest
edits
to it.
Edits to the declaration.
Well,
edits to our resolution.
Well, edits to our resolution.
Right.
And then bring that back. When is our next business meeting? Is it
21st?
The 21st. And bring it back on April 21st on the consent agenda. I know some of y'all came here tonight to hear us adopt it and instead got to hear about our capricious issues. But hopefully we could do this on April
21st. Can I ask a question of
sure.
maybe some of the folks? Is there someone here who brought forth the resolution?
They are. They're.
I know, but...
In the back row back there, Heidi.
Can I have them come up and ask them?
Why don't you ask your question, they'll
okay.
send somebody.
All right, yeah, okay. My question is that some of the language, because it's a 61-year-old document, seems kind of outdated based on what Carborough has, other resolutions Carborough has put forth. So I kind of wanted to get a feel for whether or not, you know, the language could be updated to reflect what Carborough currently values and has in her ordinances.
The gendered language in particular is unsettling.
Right.
Could we add an addendum to talk about?
Yeah, I think that's essentially what we're talking about, yeah. But that, I mean, it makes sense to you what we're talking about doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So let me suggest that I think those members of the board who want to have some suggestions maybe can send them in and we'll bring this item back
right.
on April 21st.
Okay.
Thanks.
So you're tentatively accepting the petition with these
resolutions? We'll take a formal vote on April 21st.
Right.
On it. But yeah, it's not a matter, I mean, I think it's just a matter of we wanted to add some things.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Okay.
So is the motion for the agenda minus number 3 and 8?
Yes.
So, I'll second.
Yeah.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter passing unanimously.
Number eight, what was the issue about that?
Well, you know, I recall the last time they were here, which was back February. When were they back? When was this, the fourth?
In February, yes.
Yeah. Right. And it was indicated then that the developer was going to talk to the neighbors or see if they can do something different. And that's fine. My only concern is that with the people who knew that it was scheduled for the 28th, will all those people know that it's going to be rescheduled for the 19th?
We would, if the board chooses to take that action, then we would plan to notify them. The applicants here, I'm not sure what else they may plan to do, but we would try to reach everybody who's been involved in this via email and then public notice.
To be on the trash cans. I was, you know, read that stuff. I read the stuff that they put on there. Okay. I just don't want anyone to say when they come on the 19th, what, we're not going to discuss this, because they will be very unhappy people.
Or
that's true. They were not that
before.
Happy.
Or the weekend before. And so I, if it's at all possible that they have noticed in advance that it's been rescheduled to the 19th. I mean, I don't think it's Mother's Day.
We will absolutely notify everybody. That's part of our reason, is we're going to have another meeting with the neighbors. The spring break this week interrupted that. Mm-hmm. So we will absolutely do everything and make sure everybody knows that this meeting has been rescheduled.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much.
But we're not going to rely on this.
We also have a list of people who had signed up before.
Yeah, and so if we could just send them a little postcard or something like that.
Would you mind if we tried to do it via email? We have a lot of email addresses.
I would not mind it to do email, but some people don't operate by email. So those that you don't have email for, if you could send them a little postcard. Just a little postcard, not a letter. 20 cents, not 42.
Okay. I mean, we'll do what you all say.
But not, I mean, I'm just saying for those that you don't have email addresses for. I'm not saying everybody get a postcard, but for those folks.
You don't know what that is.
Right. You don't know what that is.
I'm a little concerned that.
We don't necessarily
worry about, you know,
right,
missing somebody that way.
Well, if we do the standard. Well,
if you guys have the addresses, then.
Okay, I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied to myself. We don't have to spend the point.
I have noticed a certain amount of organization that seems to be going on within the neighborhood.
That's fine then. That's all.
We'll just take judicial notice of that.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, we are on item D1.
Okay, this is a request for emergency housing repair assistance from the Affordable Housing Revenue Fund. This is to allow for the possibility of a complete repair to a roof and chimneys on a house at 109 Jones Ferry Road, and there's a budget amendment attached to the item if the board so chooses, and James Harris has a brief presentation to share more information about this item. James?
I'll start by saying this house is located at 109 Jones Ferry Road, and it's on the Strayhorn House. It's a historic house in Carborough. I've been working with Mrs. Clark, hold, raise your hand, for about 4 or 5 years trying to figure out a way to fix this house because it has a lot of code violations and it's just in need of repair, but it's very costly. We finally figured out a way to do it if we can get the assistance from the board. The total cost of repair is about $102,000. We're requesting that we use $28,000 of our affordable housing fund to fix the chimneys and that very expensive roof. That'll bring it down to a level where we can use CDBG funds to do the other $72,000 worth of repair. She meets all the criteria for the loan. And if we do all this work, it'll be in excellent condition so that she can continue to live there safely with her grandsons. So if we fund this, we will we currently have $39,750 in the fund. We'll use $28,000, and that will leave $11,750. This fund has been very good for addressing these kind of issues in town, and I have another one that's sort of waiting in the wings to use it. So I hope we can get some more money in that fund. So she'll have to do an agreement with the town. It'll be for 15 years, and each year we'll do a deferred loan repayment of $1,866. We'll just deduct that from the obligation. So I'm seeking support for this.
This is, as you say, James, really a historic landmark in our town. I think it's certainly a very, from my point of view, a very fitting use for this money. And I also take note of the fact that the residents in the house are people who have been public servants in our community and are in danger of becoming landmarks themselves in our community. I think it's a, I think this is a good opportunity, and it's exactly what we created this fund for. So,
move adoption of the resolution.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much, James.
I'll take this time. We're running out of
these. Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. Keep track of that. Those are hard to come by. Okay. Mr. Manager, agenda item D2. Okay.
The next item is a status report from the Local Living Economy Task Force, and this is to give you all an update from the task force. And I think Sammy Slade, our committee chair, is prepared to present the update to the board. Sam?
Okay, hey, how are you all doing tonight? I'm going to share with y'all the Local Living Economy Task Force's latest work and where we're at. We've gone through this. Our method is basically using this book, The Small Mart Revolution, Michael Schumann book, How Local Businesses Are Beating the Global Competition. And we've divided up various chapters, entrepreneurs, consumers, policymakers, community builders, and investors amongst the task force members. And so far we've dealt with entrepreneurs and consumers. So I'll go through each one of those sections, and we've identified three items that we want to share with you guys tonight. So with the entrepreneurs, we would like to advocate for a coalition of local businesses or a business alliance for local living economies. And this is part of a national movement of various municipalities and cities that are setting up small businesses supporting themselves to advance and establish further local living economies. The second item is provide a list of available resources for businesses. And so I'll go in detail on each one of these. And then the third item is creation of businesses, a business directory. And the fourth one is a questionnaire sent to businesses. This is actually part of the consumer section, so I'll skip it. So the Bali Carbo, the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, what it will allow various small businesses is access to a bunch of materials and information on what other communities have done and connect to this national network that has had success throughout the country in helping further establish local living economies. So there are materials on promoting local living economies, some including like top 10 lists for why to shop local, and coupon books and directories and all kinds of other helpful things. This group has actually already had three meetings. And it was encouraged by the Local Living Economy Task Force. Actually, many of us on the task force kind of initiated that. And we have received a pledge to provide money for becoming an officially a Bali chapter. The second item is a list of business resources. So James Harris has created this list, and it includes the Carbo Revolving Fund, along with other business resource guide items, such as a list of accountants and taxes, finance, links to NC Department of Commerce, insurance, legal licenses, permits, vacant properties, etc. And that will be on the town website for small businesses to make use of. And then there is a business directory that has been completed, and that will allow consumers in our community to have knowledge of all the businesses that there are that are of a small scale here in town. And eventually we'll have this available on the town website. One of the challenges will be how to maintain this directory as businesses leave or new businesses come on board. It's important to keep this directory updated. James Harris already sent out a questionnaire that similar to one that we're planning to send out to small businesses. And with this business directory, we'll be able to reach more businesses. So the one he sent out was sent to 68 businesses, of which it reached 50. I mean, it's all right there, so I won't read it. And this one measured the interest of a town-sponsored business workshop, and the interest was positive. In the consumer section, four items that we identified are right here: educational campaigns on reasons to buy local, pilot educational campaigns on local business sectors, local living economy kickoff event, and an honor junk test or event to see to celebrate junk or actually reducing the amount of waste that our community produces. We'll go into detail on that. So the educational campaign on reasons to buy local, this ties into the current economic crisis and will provide information on benefits for shopping local, and will develop methods of communication, time and materials, timeline, and then the town's role would be to support the network's activity, the Business Alliance for Local Living Economy, and coordinate with other entities. Pilot educational campaigns on local business sectors. Some examples include Heal Local campaign, where we'd identify various healing businesses within our community, chiropractors, doctor offices, and other businesses. Another one would be eating local, celebrating our local food here with the restaurants and other places people can get local food. And then the third one is a local auto services campaign, Carbo traditionally being a service place. People come and there are a lot of auto shops, and making sure that the money stays circulating here locally. These are inspired from Michael Schumann's book, where he identified leakage from communities, and one of those items was auto services. A lot of money leaves the community because of who owns the automotive industry. So the town's role would be to support the network's activities by coordinating with other entities, such as the Visitors Bureau, could provide funding for advertising and tech support through database management. Another item is a local living economy kickoff event. This is to promote and share with people in the community the reasons why to support a local living economy. So it would be the first of a series of events. And the town's role would be to organize this first event, and ongoing it would be supporting the promotion of events and coordinate with other town events. It could piggyback back onto another event that town is having, like perhaps the centennial or something. And then an honor junk event, and this will encourage reuse, recycling, repairing, reselling. And we already have some projects in town that are do things along these lines, such as the Really Really Free Market and the Recyclery. And the town's role would be to be the primary organizer and promoter, since we currently have this issue with landfill deposits. This would make a lot of sense for the town to take on.
Long-standing issue, not current.
Long-standing. Current in that hopefully this will resolve it and it won't be so long-standing, perhaps. And that's where we're at right now. We've got these three other items that we'll tackle.
Question from the board?
I have a question. And this is mostly just for people who might be watching at home or whatnot, as well as for our edification. Did the task force, because I missed the last meeting, did the task force discuss the relationship of the local living economy to the current economic crisis? And I was wondering if you could kind of like just briefly speak to that, how that the one impacts on the other.
Yeah, we haven't gone into detail about it, but definitely we're in the investor section right now, and there's been discussion on how to localize finances, and it's especially pertinent considering the global financial meltdown and the lack of accountability that exists because of the way that everything is on these abstract derivatives throughout the world. Whereas if we had a local economy, things would be a little more grounded and accountable for the business people who would be having personal connections to the community. And so that's just the financial side of that. And then with the questions of these larger businesses, multinational businesses, the car companies, the big box stores, that are all heavily dependent on importing from cheaper places, there's the question of providing a secure economy in the sense that as credit dries up and it's harder to import these things, then it becomes a burden for the community. So if these things were localized, then we'd have more control over them. So with food and stuff, is that kind of long?
Sammy, I wanted to just ask you. You mentioned on the entrepreneurs there was measured interest in the town-sponsored business workshop from the survey. Can you kind of share a little bit of that? What kind of things folks are interested in?
Yeah, I don't have the details on that. James may have a better answer than I do. We provided that in this a presentation as an example of what the questionnaire and how we'll be able to expand to more people because of the business list that we've developed. But James, do you have some information on that?
I think there's one particular that we've been working on.
In last year's budget, the town set aside some money to do workshops through the SBTDC. And that project is centered around growing for business green. So what I've done is work with Ron Ellenich at the SBTDC to develop a curriculum. We intend to give that to about 30 to 40 businesses. And what we've done, we start making up the list, and we're going to pull them off the survey. The survey was good because one of the questions I asked was, if we do it, would you come? And the response was very positive. So that'll be the first one that we'll do.
Okay.
This is the survey we saw at the retreat.
At the retreat, yes. I saw an opportunity to dovetail something else in with that survey.
Good idea.
Right. Okay.
Lydia, are you done?
Yeah, I had two questions. One, Sammy, are you, by that one side, are you suggesting, or is it the group suggesting that the town be responsible for organizing the really, really free market?
Oh, no. No, it would be, you know, collaborating and augmenting the promotion of it.
Can you go back to that slide? I mean, maybe I misread it. So, towns will be the primary organizer and promoter. Is that just in general advertising? Is that what you're saying, or?
Yeah, I mean, it would be more comprehensive than the current event that the Really, Really Free Market has. It could probably be done in conjunction, collaborating with them, obviously, like, with their consent. If they'd like to organize it the same day as this event, it would make sense. We haven't communicated with anyone from the Really, Really Free Market to know whether it's something they'd be willing to do, or even with the recyclery. But we see that these two projects already existing in town are in line with this idea.
Okay, I understand now. It's an event. I mm-hmm. gotcha. Okay.
Right, yeah. It was also suggested that the scrap exchange in Durham might mm-hmm. participate in something like this, and you know, mm-hmm. maybe something like the scrap exchange could be effective in Carrboro.
I understand. It's not ongoing. It's a one-time event. I see. And my second question is about the directory. And you noted that it's done or almost done, and it's going to be on the website, and then someone will be periodically, I guess, updating it or keeping it up to date. And this is just an observation. I know that there's another website that I learned about through a chamber event, but it's also a bi-local website that lists it somehow picks up all of the organizations in town, and it's a way to be able to say, like, I'm in Carrboro and I want to buy underwear. you type it in and it'll pop up in Carrboro where you can get that. Mm-hmm. So it might be that, James, it might be that in addition to or maybe supplementing this or maybe even replacing it sometime, it might be that that's a more ongoing, viable link that might be good to have there.
Do you know the URL?
I have it at home. I can give it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can give it to you.
Yes, ma'am.
Just for the, if, and I don't know if you've had, since you said you haven't had discussions with the Really, Really Free Market representatives, such as they are. But, you know, I would ask the board to revisit some of the difficulties we had with them some months ago. And what I would say is that if they're going to participate, anything that the town is using taxpayers' money to sponsor, they're going to have to follow the rules.
Okay. Thanks very much, Sam.
Okay. Nice report.
Thanks. Mr. Manager, item D3.
There is a resolution if you consider accepting the
report. I'll move the acceptance of the report.
I see. Been moved.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Okay. Before I go to the next item, I missed a message from Alderman Herrera, who is also ill tonight.
Okay. So
I apologize. I just saw the message.
Thanks.
The next item is an update on the Jordan Lake rules, and this is to give you all a status of rulemaking for Jordan Lake subsequent to the last update that we provided in May of 2008. There is a draft resolution in your packet for you to consider that expresses some concerns that at least the staff has uncovered about certain aspects of the draft rules that we would ask you to consider. And Randy Dodd, our environmental planner, has a brief presentation for you all. Randy?
Good evening. Just wanted to give you an update, as Steve mentioned, and just as a way of introducing that, just to remind everyone about the extent of the Jordan Lake Basin. This is a map showing the jurisdictions that fall within the Jordan Lake Basin, so all the way up to Forsyth and Guilford County, close to Winston-Salem, north of Greensboro, Burlington area. This is all in the Hog River drainage part of the basin, and then we're located here in the Upper New Hope watershed in southern Orange and southern Durham, a little bit in northern Wake and Chatham counties as well. And just zooming in so you can actually see the map of the jurisdictions in the Upper New Hope. Here's the New Hope arm of Jordan Lake and the watershed boundary shown in black. The county boundaries, so Orange, Durham, Chatham, and Wake. Carrboro, Chapel Hill, this is all Durham. A little bit of Mooresville and Cary also here in the Upper New Hope watershed. The Jordan Lake rules went through several iterations. The Environmental Management Commission approved them last fall. They're subsequently reviewed by the Rules Review Commission. I'm sorry, the EMC approved them initially in the spring, and then they went back and forth with the Rules Review Commission, and a new version was put out, I believe, late fall. And as I understand it, the General Assembly has until June to act on these rules as they've been put out. This is just a summary of the rules. There's 13 sections. The ones in yellow are the ones that staff believe are most appropriate for Carrboro. I won't go through each one of these, but just to show you what they are. And also shown in some of these in italics are ones that the ones regarding riparian buffers are ones you all recently took action on. And also fertilizer management is one we have a draft town code amendment for. So probably most notably, stormwater management provisions are what the town is most concerned about. The Upper New Hope arm in the Jordan rules requires a 35% nitrogen reduction, a 5% phosphorus reduction. In the Lower New Hope arm down in Chatham County, the rules require basically holding the baseline, no increase from the baseline, which is considered a 1997 to 2001 period. And then in the Hall River arm, it's 8% and a 5% reduction. The existing development rules did go through some modifications as they were being developed. And these are just a couple of points from those revisions, that local governments would be asked to meet half of their reductions in the 10-year implementation period, or propose an alternative along with supporting analysis. And really, there's a 3 to 4 year sort of ramping up and planning phase before the rules really kick in. Existing development is our challenge in Carrboro, and sort of the traditional ways of thinking about that, when you just hear people talking about, well, how are we going to get at existing development? These are sort of the likely candidates. Retrofitting best management practices when land is redeveloped, including best management practice treatment, over-treatment and new development. That's sort of going above and beyond what is required to allow you to get some credit towards existing development. And then sort of a rather dramatic or drastic, but, you know, possible in some situations would be actually, the one that comes to my mind might be some kind of reclamation of a brownfield or something like that, the actual removal of a built-upon area. Now, there are a number of other things that the rules do allow for dealing with existing development, and these are just a listing of those. I won't go into each one of these in details, but just do want to make it clear that the existing development rule allows for a lot of flexibility in terms of ways of addressing it beyond just sort of the more traditional BMP approach, structural BMP approach. So all of these bullets up here are really sort of practices of some kind, and then this last bullet speaks to not necessarily a specific practice, but a financial approach, and an offset approach basically entails you do as much as you can up to a point, and then what you can't accomplish in your practices, you can pay into a fund to essentially buy down the requirement. There's also been a lot of talk about a trading program, and this and there's actually a project that was funded by the Cape Fear, well, through the Cape Fear Assembly to look at this in the Jordan Lake watershed. And this would basically set up a market to allow for the trading of these nutrient reductions to make, and the idea is to encourage and facilitate the most cost-effective means that would sort of be a win-win for everyone by establishing this market for trading. There's also, it's important, yeah.
Could you go back to that previous slide? Just with the last thing you're just discussing, would the area that's doing the trading, would they have to have already met the standard?
Yeah, the essential idea is that there would be sort of sellers and buyers, and the sellers would be ones that had met the standard and gone beyond some, so they would have an ability to, you know, because they had gone beyond, they would have an ability to receive some compensation for that from potential buyers out there who weren't in as fortunate a position.
But then what's to encourage the other buyers if it's cheaper to buy the, if you will, I'll just call it a share in less pollution? And I mean, what, I'm always afraid of the market because it just doesn't work all the time. And I don't know if we should be, government should be, if you will, encouraging that type of behavior. Because what I could think about is somebody could securitize it, sell it, how do you value it, and there you go again. So that's my little 30-second rant.
Randy, how did that get onto, I mean, everything else is very concrete, you know.
So the trading program is really, it's allowed in the rules, but it's really an entirely separate initiative that all of the stakeholders, I mean, everyone, it would have to be advantageous to, you know, everyone to make it work. And so it would be something that would be looked at if the parties involved were inclined to do so.
Randy, you know, when we hear the word retrofit, old, you know, existing developments, are these categories of retrofitting, or is retrofitting of a more specific term that's used in conjunction with the rules?
Well, it's a term that may have some ambiguity in its use, but you know, I hear stormwater engineers, and when they talk about retrofits, they usually have a very specific sort of connotation for what they're talking about, and there may be others who use that term a little more loosely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Were you at the end of your presentation?
He was not. Sorry, we interrupted.
I just have just two more slides. I did want to make the point that in principle and also in language in the rules, there's an encouragement of this idea of adaptive management. And this is basically learning as you go, and so. While there is this 10-year window for these rules as they're drafted, this adaptive management approach that is being championed has various provisions to try to be flexible. And finally, just sort of guessing as to potential interests that you may have, and certainly that it seems like as representatives of Carpo that we all have, is to look at the fiscal and financial impact of this. And we don't have hard numbers to share with you about what we anticipate, and I'll say why. but I did want to make just a few points about that. Really, the approach being proposed in these rules is studying long-term progress that would begin 4 years out or so, and that would be then would continue for some years into the future, at least 10 and perhaps quite a bit longer. There would be a need for us in Carrboro to look at revising our land use ordinance for new development, and there would be some cost to the development community out there to meet a more stringent requirement for specifically for nitrogen removal. The requirement for existing development is also obviously one we're looking at, we need to look at the most closely. And there's a lot of uncertainty in how much it would cost us, in my estimation, for a whole variety of reasons, which if you're interested in me kind of going into that in more depth, I'd be happy to do so. And the final point is that there is some, it is worth mentioning that since we've been a participant in the Bowling Creek Watershed Restoration Team, some of the efforts that we've been pursuing as part of that are beneficial to us in the event that these rules are adopted. In other words, they are having, while they're specifically addressed and focused on Bowling Creek and the restoration of Bowling Creek, they will have positive impact on our compliance with Jordan Lake rules. So,
I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay. The nitrogen factor. What in our area contributes most to our nitrogen numbers?
When you say what?
Yeah, is there a specific? I mean, is
it type of land use or a source or
right? Or, well, I'm thinking: is there? I know fertilizers on lawn is a big issue. Is that the main? Is that?
Yeah, I think the two main types of sources are fertilizer and atmospheric deposition of nitrogen. When, especially when nitrogen falls on impervious surfaces. It's sort of a straight conduit,
yeah.
And little opportunity for any kind of assimilation.
Uh-huh. You there on the former slide, you had one of the bullets was for impervious disconnection. What does that refer to specifically?
Yeah, so that refers to when you've got you really can think about it as either buildings or as paved surfaces and. I believe it was here, yeah.
Yep, there it is.
It's really, you know, for buildings, it would be taking the roof drains and instead of just directly tying them into the stormwater conveyance system typically by underground piping, it would be taking that roof drainage and allowing it to flow over some kind of vegetated surface and then have some ability for infiltration. And similarly with a parking lot or a road.
Okay. I got it.
You know, it's just allowing some disconnect between right. the conveyance system and the
source
area. And
to have natural infiltration.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I have two questions. The resolution in our packet, is that similar to the Durham resolution that Durham had asked us to support?
Well, it has some similarities and it has some differences. Basically, the resolution here is just a draft that staff collaborated on to, and we looked at what other local governments had done, and we talked amongst ourselves, and we tried to anticipate what was in the best interest of the town, and so it sort of, you know, borrowed from Durham, but it also borrowed from
I guess my other question on that then would be, since it's been a few weeks since I looked at the Durham resolution when that came to us, was there anything in that that is, like, worth mentioning that you specifically rejected or modified in some way?
Well,
in terms of what their approach is versus ours?
They had a whole bunch of points in here, and I guess there wasn't necessarily anything specific. It seemed like a lot of their points were specific to Durham, and so we wanted to make sure that we didn't
okay.
sort of, you know, adopt what was best for Durham, lock, stock, and barrel.
Okay, that makes sense. My other question is, we got today this memorandum from the Haw River Assembly, and I think Elaine is going to, are you going to speak to that? Okay, we will. Have you had a chance to look at this and consider
it? Yeah, well, I mean, I came in very late. At the same time you did, and so just had a chance to.
So, I guess, Steve, what I'm interested in is whether or not we adopt the resolution before us tonight. Is it possible within the next few weeks that we could get a memo from Randy commenting on the Haw River Assembly position so that if we want to make any further communication to our legislators in regard to any of those points, we could do so?
I think this certainly could. And let me just add one thing, because I got it, I guess, shortly after Randy got it and had a chance to glance at it. I think maybe one of the key differences is that, as I recall, this letter simply asked the board to adopt or endorse lock, stock, and barrel, exactly what the Environmental Management Commission had recommended, and that's not the approach that's outlined in our resolution.
Right, and I'm interested in, I mean, there's a number of different particulars. Like, for example, they claim that some of the municipalities are using the cost of the most expensive solutions. And so I'd like to know, you know, in terms of evaluating this, I'd like to know whether or not that's true. And I'm not asking for those answers tonight. I'm asking.
Well, I was just going to say one thing to that is that's part of the reason we didn't attempt to put a hard number in here, because of not wanting to over-speculate and overstate the case. I think it's fair to say there will be some significant cost associated with it, none of which we have programmed in our capital operating budget.
That's understood.
Right.
Okay. But I was just, you know, asking in terms of being able to get a response.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let me turn to, we have two people who are here to speak on this item, actually. Let me turn to Elaine Chiosa from the Haw River Assembly.
And is it the same one that you emailed?
Yeah.
This afternoon.
Yeah, okay, I got
that.
Yeah. Over there. I got that.
Well, I appreciate your allowing me to come and speak. We're kind of getting down to the wire here on what will happen with Jordan Lake rules. We expect that the legislature will probably take them up within the next few weeks now. To date, Chatham County, Cary, and Apex have sent resolutions to the General Assembly supporting the rules as the EMC wrote them. Most Greensboro, Burlington, other Upper Haw River local governments are opposing the rules, and Durham, of course, is opposing the rules. Chapel Hill is in the process of adopting a resolution. It's now in draft form, going, it came out of a subcommittee, and is basically supporting the rules as the as they came from the EMC. And I think the 9th, I guess that's Thursday, I believe that will become a public draft, so that would be the time to see it. I've been the main environmental stakeholder for these rules for 7 years. It's a tough sell, you know. We're asking local governments to pay money to protect the waters of Jordan Lake. The point I've been trying to make through these years is that dirty water gets to Jordan Lake down dirty creeks, and every local government in the Haw River watershed has creeks that are on the federal impaired waters list. As you know, there's some in Carborough and Chapel Hill as well. This is not to point fingers. It's difficult to keep water clean in a city. And much of cities and towns, of course, were built where we didn't have stormwater regulations. So there's a lot of old development and old subdivisions even where a lot could be done to improve water quality by slowing down that stormwater, getting it you know, recharging groundwater, which we desperately need to be doing as well. There's if you look at this from a very different point of view, there's a lot of really cool stuff that cities and towns could be doing to implement the stormwater retrofit. If you've ever been to places like Seattle, you'll see that they do some incredible things in the cities where they've retrofitted for stormwater that are basically sculptures. They're a lot of fun to look at. Water's fun to watch, and you can plant some beautiful rain gardens with native plants that are accomplishing that disconnect that Randy was talking about, you know, where you, instead of these waters rushing off impervious surfaces into our creeks, you've got some kind of rain garden, some kind of buffer, something that's going to absorb those nutrients and slow that water down. And I think if you think about Carborough and what's already built in it, you could probably think of a lot of places that would benefit from having some of this kind of work done. One thing that I don't think was specifically mentioned on here is that that is one of the things I mentioned in my letter. One of the things that has made this very scary cost that Durham and Greensboro have come up with so very scary is they're basing it on a 20-year implementation. There is no end date. You know, should there be an end date? As the Haw River keeper, do I think there should be an end date? Yes. But these rules are already a big compromise. After 7 years going through state stakeholder process, the EMC, the Rules Review Commission, there's a lot of compromise already in these rules. So that's one of them, that you make steady progress, you come up with plans. There was an earlier slide that talks about even that first three and a half years that you are then supposed to submit your plans to DWQ to say what kind of things you're going to try and do for stormwater. You could instead give them an alternative and say, we're going to, you know, we don't think we should be doing this. So there's a lot of flexibility in the existing development rule that, to me, there's not a lot of teeth in it. Sometimes I think it's more of a guideline than a rule, but it all depends on how you read it. I just think that it's been used to create a lot of fear about what this is really about. So, yeah, the existing development costs, we don't know what they are until really we start doing it. But without it, I truly believe Jordan Lake will never be cleaned up, because without it, what we're left with in the rules is reducing the nitrogen and phosphorus from the wastewater treatment plants, and that'll get at a third of the total nutrients in Jordan Lake. Two-thirds are from stormwater. Of that two-thirds, of course, some is from agriculture. Not very much in the upper New Hope Arm. There's not much active agriculture left in the upper New Hope Arm. And do we really want to be asking the farmers that are left to take out even more to make up for what cities wouldn't do if we take out the existing development rule? I don't think that's how we feel about, you know, what's left of family farms in our area. So we could get that total maximum daily load without the existing development piece by making all the other pieces do more, and that could include new development, which could actually mean no new development. And I don't think that's what people want either. So to me, the existing development rule is truly a way to try this out. There's a lot of flexibility, very, very lax timelines, the adaptive management part of it. And I think it will create some wonderful improvements in cities and towns in terms of both cleaner creeks, but also, as a lot of you know, our creeks in urban areas are just reamed by stormwater. You know, we're really, it's the volume going in that's also a problem. So when I look at your, when I look at this resolution that was drafted by staff, I think it would just be awful to send that over to the General Assembly. What we need right now is some cities and towns and counties to step up and say we're willing to do our share, and we're willing to give this a try. And when you go into negotiations with the legislature, you know, we're not going to come out with the rules that the EMC passed. I mean, I'm here to say that. I know that. You know, we've got too much opposition on the other side. But I would hope Carrboro would come down on the side of saying, yes, let's try to protect Jordan Lake. And I don't think we can do that unless we keep the existing development rule in place. It may get altered. It may become even weaker than it is, but it still needs to be in there. I think if it was one suggestion has been to take it out and work on it some more and put it back another time, I don't think it would ever come back. So I would, I'm here to urge Carrboro to join with some of their neighbors, help their downstream neighbors that do rely on Jordan Lake. Who knows what's in the future? Orange County may someday want to drink out of Jordan Lake. I know you don't want to now. I'd like to see, just on a local level, I'd like to see the protections for creeks that flow to Jordan Lake have the same protections as these creeks that are in the University Lake watershed and the Cane Creek watershed. And we're talking with Orange County about that tonight. We just taught a course to volunteers on Muddy Water Watch on sediment construction practices. And, you know, it's discouraging to look at a site and see that it doesn't get the same protections that it would if it was in the Eno watershed or the Cane Creek watershed. So, you know, this would also even the playing field here. And evening, that whole thing of getting the playing field even for all the jurisdictions that are part of this, it's painful to understand that there's no riparian buffers in Rockingham County, in Alamance County, Pittsburgh. You know, that's not right. And these rules will at least get everybody up to that same level. I did want to address your comment about the nutrient trading. I am not a fan of nutrient trades myself, of pollution trades in general. They are in the rules because they've been used for the Neuse River Basin and the Tarpamblico River Basin for many, many years now. So it was pretty much automatic that something would happen here. There may not be as much to trade in this watershed as when you think of the entire Neuse Basin and the entire Tarpamblico. This is a much more urbanizing, developed basin than those long basins going out to the estuaries. I didn't read from my letter at all, so there may have been things that people would like to ask me about.
There are, in fact.
Yes, please.
Elaine, what's your feeling about our request about recognizing our pre-baseline development?
Yeah, you know, when I looked at this resolution, I thought that I think it's fine to ask for that. I think that's something that will actually be negotiated as the rules, as you get into that planning process. If the state had the resources, they probably would have liked to have been able to take each local jurisdiction in each one of those arms and be able to do a tremendous amount more modeling and monitoring and data input to be able to say, this is really what the nutrients are coming out of Carrboro, coming out of Orange County, coming out of Chapel Hill. Instead, it's what's getting loaded into the lake at the Upper New Hope Arm. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that would have meant for Durham. If they've got to hit this 35%, and you think of the population of Durham compared to the other jurisdictions that are loading into Upper New Hope. Anyway, I think that is something that can be raised once it's undergoing in this 3.5-year planning period is. Mm-hmm. Really looking at what is coming out of Carrboro's jurisdiction. I don't think it would, you know, I don't think it would get it off the hook for nothing has to get done, but I think it would make a difference. And, of course, you do understand that anything that's been done since 2001 mm-hmm. does count as credits. You get nutrient credits for anything that was put in place after 2001.
Okay. Dan, did you?
Yeah, are you I mean, I guess kind of just following up on the next point in the resolution, is the Assembly opposed to the idea that the state should reduce the financial impact on municipalities?
The state, meaning both the executive branch and the legislative branch, are looking, scrambling right now because of the new federal stimulus money to look at ways that some of that can go towards Jordan Lake jurisdictions that have to follow these rules and how that process could take place given the federal guidelines and rules about timelines on that money. So that's one thing that's happening. The CCAP money that I mentioned is Community Conservation Assistance Program, a great new source from the state for stormwater retrofits in urban areas. There's already other programs in place that might be tapped into as well. I don't think it's a good idea to ask the state to guarantee financial report. That's kind of like saying anytime we think there should be new environmental regulations that they have to be paid for by the state government or the federal government. I mean, so I think that guarantee word is not a very good idea to put into a resolution, but I think asking for support would make a lot of sense. But guaranteeing it doesn't quite sound like a good idea to me. I think outright opposition to the existing development rules would really harm Jordan Lake right now. So I would say of this draft, on the whereases, I sure would like to see, you know, number 4, number 8, and number 9 not be included in that. Those are all pretty, I think those are based on this information coming out of, again, Durham and Greensboro about super high costs that I don't think are borne out by what the existing development rule says. I think on the resolves, 3 and 4, you know, are fine, and 2 may be rewritten so that it's asking for help, you know, instead of demanding help would make a lot of sense to me because I think some of that help is going to be coming.
I have a question for Elaine. What kind of feedback do you get from folks up in Greensboro? I understand, our position. I think Carbo for a long time has been very mindful of not only where she is, you know, in the stream flow, but helping those who are downstream. But what are you hearing from folks in Greensboro? Because Carbo is in a really awkward position with this. I mean, probably out of all the municipalities and the county areas that you've mentioned, Carbo is, you know, in
Carbo and Chapel Hill, I would say.
Right.
Both.
But
I'd
even,
say
even Carbo more than Chapel Hill, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, not much difference there, you know.
Right.
Both
so what do you
35%.
Hear?
I'm on TV, right?
I
mean, I've been in meetings upriver in Greensboro and Burlington or during the stakeholder process where I basically heard staff say, why should we have to clean up our water for a lake downstream that we don't use?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just don't think that's a very moral position to take.
Are there any other test cases around the state where this kind of situation is occurring where rules are being designed for, you know, surface waters that upstream areas or surrounding
areas?
Well,
the Neuse River nutrient rules and the tar pamlico rules have been in place for a long time now, and that's the kind of rules they were. They did not include the existing development part. This is the first basin that's that includes that, and I would say that's because it's such a urbanized basin compared to the Neuse and the Tar Pam, the entire lengths of them going out to the estuaries. This is a much tighter space and much more developed. This is the precedent, you know, the opposition is saying these rules will be precedent. Yes, they will be. Falls Lake is next. The state's already working on a nutrient management plan for Falls Lake because it's also on the federal impaired waters list. High Rock Lake will be probably the next one. So what happens with Jordan will happen across the state, and that's another reason why we really want to see the existing development rule kept in it. I think it's just key. How can you clean up a body of water if you don't clean up the sources that are already contributing to it? No.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay. Appreciate your time.
William, excuse me, William Stott, if you would come up.
What's that?
Come up. Oh, well, do you have something to say?
I wanted to ask a question.
Come up so that people can hear you at home.
And it's one of the slides about the land use. I don't know, can this be moved or changed so that there was one that had revised land use policies? I think it was the previous one.
No,
it seems to me like there was one that had...
We just have ones for existing development.
Huh. I could have sworn I saw one that was kind of like about four bullet
points.
Yeah,
there was one. I saw it too, William.
There was a land use, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
Don't go backwards, go forwards. Keep going. Was there one after this? Is there a land use one here?
No.
Is there another one after this?
There it is.
Ta-da. All right, I'm not losing my mind. Yeah, see, the need to revise land use ordinance.
Oh, okay.
So it was just a question about whether the revision of land use ordinances would be connected with the issue that came up that I missed earlier because I came and didn't see it on the agenda about the goats. Something I'm very strongly in favor of, by the way, just for the record. But
and he does live in that neighborhood. Yes.
I live right behind them. So anyway, you'll get a letter from me, and I'll come to the public meeting. But as far as that goes, if changes are made in ordinances that would affect yards like that, where livestock or, you know, I don't know, more active, aggressive land management on private properties, is that connected to this review and the thinking about the land use ordinances? I just want to know, really, kind of, are they related, you know, and would the goat issue, so to speak, come up in the, you know, neighborhood land use? Is that relevant to this?
Well, I suppose you could take that piece of land and take it out of the development category and put it into agriculture.
Okay.
Would change how they looked at the rule.
Well, that's kind of a mixed use, though. Let me say
I don't think that's specifically the kind of thing that they were contemplating when they wrote that on that slide.
Okay.
We actually have made a number of revisions to the land use ordinance already recently that address some of what would be required in the Jordan Lake rules, the buffers and that type of thing.
Okay.
But I presume that what staff was getting at was there may be other aspects of our development ordinance, our zoning rules, things like that might have to change in order to accommodate the rules. Is that
I think that's a fair statement, though I would say the question you raised, William, I think it's certainly possible that would be a part of what might have to be looked at, particularly if we're dealing with existing development, because the bottom line is we've got to meet those reduction percentages and we have to figure out how to get there. So I would think everything would be on the table to look at.
Well, sure. I didn't mean to dismiss the issue. I'm just saying I don't think that's the kind
but
necessarily
what
specifically
we
what they were getting at, but
okay. Well, I mean, since I'm glad to hear that answer, I just would like to encourage you to think about specifically how people are using their yards and do what mm-hmm. you can to accommodate more diverse land usage. I think that, you know, the revolution's going to start on the lawn. And if we can get people to be thinking about what they're doing in their yards, on their lawns, mixed-use gardens, and promote that through education programs. I think it can have a much more profound effect than almost anything else that we could do, is to, you know, encourage that kind of thing, because you can catch so much more water running off if you've got gardens and that sort of thing. And so that's what was in my mind, but I was just curious if those two issues would be connected, and so I would encourage them to be connected.
So, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for letting me come up.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Randy, I have a question for you. How do you ascertain what the nitrogen and phosphorus levels are in existing development? What kind of an undertaking is that?
Can I ask specific to the rules? Are you interested?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
There will be, the state has in the Newsom Tar Pamlico basins developed state-approved accounting tools, you know, basically calculations, ways of calculating this. And so they will probably take what they've already done and slightly modify it to make it specific to the Jordan Lake situation as the soils and so forth are here. And so that will be developed by the state early on, and assuming the rules move forward, you know, that will be a prescribed thing, and we would just use what the state would develop.
That's not something we have ever undertaken to try to ascertain, or that we would as part of this. It would be by the under the rules. It would be done a certain way.
Yeah, I don't believe Carborough has gotten into that historically very much. It's something that I've done in my previous positions with other organizations I'm familiar with. Alternative.
Thank you.
Let me just try to address it, and Randy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but based upon our previous discussion, my understanding is that the way this works is not the way one might hope. One would somehow stick a measurement thing in the creek somewhere and measure the existing level of nitrogen and phosphorus, and then measure whether, and that from that base you'd decide if what you're doing is actually working. That's not how this is going to operate. Everything is all done on modeling, is my understanding.
Yeah, well, there will be, you know, there's it's a complex set of rules, and there is this calculation, which is your sort of accounting of how you're doing, and in a parallel sense, there is also monitoring that's actually done, where, and there has been historically, there's been some monitoring, and part of what would be involved here is that the monitoring program would have to probably be substantially upgraded for additional sites and perhaps more frequencies and, you know, basically an ability to better account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Joel and then Dan.
This is sort of a follow-up question. So if I understand you correctly, there's no pre-existing data that the state will use to measure from where we were in 2001 to where we're supposed to be at a certain point in time to reduce to 35%, that it is done by modeling, one, and two, then increased, if you will, monitoring by the state.
Yeah, so what the state has done is they've used a combination of monitoring and modeling data to estimate what the baseline condition is at a certain resolution. They haven't, and then they will rely on us to, for our jurisdiction, to actually sort of calibrate and specify, you know, to sort of be a little bit more specific about what they've done. They've taken things to where they can calculate it, a small watershed, which for them, for looking at the whole Jordan Lake system, they've calculated the loading values for Bowling Creek and Morgan Creek and, you know, several mm-hmm. other tributaries. But they haven't tried, and they've used land use data, but it's sort of at this larger geographic scale. So they don't have the real resolution that we have by knowing much more about what's going on in our town. So we'll, will develop estimates of our actual situation based on our data that then we will use in our plan to propose to them, you know, here's where we are, and this would be how we would propose.
So, for example, if we were to start taking, if you will, water samples under the bridge prior to the Claremont development, because it's in that watershed, and then we sort of on a regular basis, I suppose, would send somebody out to get water, test it, or we get a sample, would we be able to tell the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus that is being put into the system? Now, I'm not talking about Lake Hogan Farms because it's right next door, and a lot of impervious surface there. But, you know, when we get time to comment, I'll comment. But I guess I'm trying to understand what the basis the state's going to be using, that if we say, no, that can't be right, we're not putting that amount of nutrients in the system, it's Chapel Hill or it's even Greensboro. Where is the protection for a town who started earlier than later? And you know, and to be quite honest, that's my whole problem with these rules.
That's a very good question.
You know, I don't have a problem doing my part because I'm upstream of Jordan Lake. I have a problem doing my part and Greensboro's part.
Right. Well, you are completely separate from Greensboro.
You know.
You're doing Durham's part.
Or Durham's part. And I like Durham. Lots of my relatives live in Durham. Has been worse than Durham.
It's not precisely quantifiable. You don't know.
Damn. Yeah. I guess my feeling is that the point of view of the Hoar River Assembly notwithstanding, I don't think this resolution opposes the regulation. I think it seeks to add a measure of regulatory and fiscal fairness to it, as Joel was just alluding to. But I do think that we can frame it in a way that it clarifies the support as opposed to the opposition. So what I would like to do is move the resolution as follows, that item number 4, which says the board supports further reduction of nutrients to Jordan Lake, become item 1, and that the word other be stricken from that item, so that we lead off with what we support. And then we qualify that by saying, here's what we oppose, here's what we could support, here's what we request. So the other items are fine. So I'm basically putting that notion of what we support in front and then making it clear that what we're looking for is an improvement that is responsive to the various concerns of the town of Carborough that are raised in the whereas.
So you're only seeking to change the order.
The order and to strike that word other, which I don't think would make sense if you move number 4 to number 1.
Okay, read it with that striking, because
it says the board supports further reduction of nutrients to Jordan Lake through the various measures included in the draft rules, et cetera. And that would be number 1. And then we have.
And with subsequent renumbering.
Yes.
I guess I'm not. I support that. However, I feel like what was originally paragraph 1. I'm not necessarily comfortable with paragraph 1. I think particularly because paragraph 2 gets at the point that, you know, the main issue or potential issue about the retrofits is the cost. And that with, you know, support and participation from the state and or federal government, that, you know, retrofits
could be a really good thing. So I would want to just strike the first paragraph altogether.
Strike that one?
Yeah.
Old number one?
Old number one.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah, I agree.
And I haven't looked. Elaine had raised some reservations about some of the whereas clauses.
Well, yeah, but just so everybody knows, yes, I would leave old number two the way it is because,
yes,
you know, us asking the government for money, the federal government, the state government, based upon my many years of being on this board and watching state government, if it's not included in the law, no amount of asking is going to get the town of Carrboro funds from the state government. And I would be hesitant to ask them for money, given, you know, how much work the counties had to go to for Medicaid and Medicare. So, and I, for one, have grown weary of passing down unfunded mandates to the governmental entities that has the least amount of control on diversifying its revenue. So,
and just to put that on a little bit finer point on it, Elaine, I think you just haven't had your state money yanked out from under you quite as dramatically as we have before. So,
one other word.
Forgive our word choice.
On number two, then, maybe to mirror number three, it might say the board requests the existing development provisions guarantee financial support. So putting in requests instead of could support and taking out the if.
No, I want the if. I think the if is really important. If they guarantee.
Right.
So, but then should it say only that we only support?
I don't think it's good public policy for us to say, a town our size, that somehow we're going to get the extra money together when we don't even have enough money to develop a park we bought 5 years ago. I'm just putting it out there. That we don't have enough money to do all the things that we need to do.
Right, so I'm asking about the best wording in this phrase to express
read
that.
Read it the way that you were just suggesting, Dan. What is the wording?
Well, one of two ways. One is that the board requests the existing development provisions guarantee financial support. Or the alternative would be the board only supports the existing development provisions if they guarantee financial support.
How about would support?
Or would instead of could?
Right. I could live with would.
Would is good.
Okay, I'll say would.
Okay.
So we got a new one, struck the old one, and we got wood instead of could.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
that was all what I meant to say in my
four is moved to
one.
It was also suggested that the language in whereas clauses number 4, 8, 9.
Right.
I mean, we could just drop some or all of those whereas clauses.
Eight and nine are a little bit redundant, but it adds to the point of seven, I guess.
So you would strike out four, strike out eight, and leave everything else the same?
And strike out nine.
Whatever, I'm counting wrong.
That's the suggestion, is take out that, and that.
And what's the problem? I'm not clear on what the problem is with number four.
No, I'm not either.
Could someone explain that to me?
Yeah.
Mark or Lydia?
Yeah, I think four is okay. I mean, I think four kind of makes our point.
States our case.
Yeah, could I say, we put that in there because I think that's a true statement.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not done anywhere else in the state,
right?
Right. I think seven, eight, nine seem a little redundant. A couple of them could come out, I think.
Well, let's just. How about if we just take out eight and nine and just.
Okay.
Because I was.
How about just nine? Because I feel like.
It's your
staff, I think when staff put in number eight, that it was expressive of a very dire concern that they had,
right,
and that I think Joel was also echoing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think eight needs to stay.
Let's just take out nine, which I think is redundant.
I stayed up a little bit too late watching a sporting event last night. I'm sorry.
No, I'm shocked. Shocked.
Okay, so is everyone clear on what the motion is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Second. I'll second it.
All right, it's been moved and seconded for the resolution as greatly tinkered with. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes 5-0. Are there are there any other matters from the staff?
Yes, sir.
Other matters from the board?
I would like to suggest that we do the advisory board dinner as we have in the past this year, and rather than have a discussion tonight, schedule a discussion of whether or not we want to find some way to make it less costly, if that's a concern in the future.
Yeah, I'd like
and
to.
I don't know if I need to make a motion on that.
I take that as a motion.
Yeah. Okay. I second that. I think it's a little late in the game. And,
all right. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Great work. All right.
A quick question: have we tried to RSVP for that, Sarah? Have we tried to get RSVPs for that, or have we just? Maybe that might be a way to maybe try to come up with a more.
And in email today, I asked if it was possible to get the advisory board chairs to help in that with the RSVP process.
What's the chair get if they have? Do they get a bigger?
Yeah. Right, bigger piece
okay.
of cake.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
Oh, we're not
so moved.
Wait. Yeah, that's not yet.
Oh, yeah. Are we doing that tonight?
Yeah, that was scheduled. I thought.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What's that? Do we have an was there a request for?
Yeah.
Yes, there was.
Okay.
So
is there a motion
to go into?
I move, or you can move.
But it's going into what?
Request for a closed session to discuss the personnel matter.
Second. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.